The Trump administration says bathroom use policies regarding gender are best left at the local level, while state lawmakers are considering new workplace protections aimed at the LGBT community. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. We're going to talk about the latest policy debates surrounding lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals in Florida. And here to discuss is Mark Piskarich with Equality Florida, which bills itself as the primary statewide organization advocating for gay and lesbian rights. Nathan Broomer is a Stetson Law student and on the board of Trans Action Florida, which was formed by Equality Florida in 2014. And Professor Roberto Chavarri, an employment expert with USF in the Information Systems Decision Sciences Department. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
So I want to start with, Mark, let's start with an update on what LGBT issues are before state lawmakers this year.
Sure. So Equality Florida's top legislative priority right now is passing what's called the Florida Competitive Workforce Act, which would provide protections for LGBT people in the workplace, housing, and public accommodation. Currently in the state of Florida, you can be fired at work, denied a hotel room, or denied a housing or apartment lease simply because you're LGBT, right? Mm-hmm. And so this would be a statewide non-discrimination law that would protect LGBT folks in those three scenarios.
Nathan, does a lot of firing go on for being LGBT in the workplace? Does that happen a lot?
It does happen. I can actually speak to this a little bit. I'm doing an internship right now with Pinellas County's Office of Human Rights. And there is often in local jurisdictions that have human rights ordinance a lack of awareness that you can file a claim. Mm-hmm. And that's county by county. So some counties have had some startling numbers. Other counties, I think what we really see is an underreporting of any discrimination, whether it's based on employment, housing, or public accommodations.
I want to talk more about another law that would eliminate local ordinances such as those in just a moment. But Professor Chavarri, I want to point out that you have stated you do not speak for the University of South Florida, that you're offering your own personal opinion. But critics of the bill, like the Florida Family Policy Council, say it simply gives LGBT employees a new way to sue their employers. What if the LGBT employee is terrible at what they do? Would an employer be afraid to fire them?
Any law that provides protections to the LGBT community does not require that the employers keep poor performers. All that it does is provide the same protections for the LGBT community that it does for gender, race, age, disability.
Would it make it tougher for somebody who is LGBT to land a job in the first place? Would an employer be afraid to hire somebody, fearing they might end up suing them?
That was the same argument that was made at the time of the Civil Rights Act in 1964 when protection was provided for women and African Americans. And the argument at the time was that this would prevent employers from hiring African Americans and women mm-hmm. out of fear that they would then be sued. So that argument has been made every time Congress or the legislature in the state or municipalities provide certain protections for some type of group.
Mark, the face of the transgender equality movement 10 years ago, I'm sure you remember the name, Susan Stanton. Mm-hmm. She was the city manager for Largo, who used to be Steve. Mm-hmm. In 2007, she revealed that she was transgender and she was in the process of undergoing sex reassignment. The city decided not to renew her contract.
That was unfortunate and a good example of why this bill is very important, because you have a very qualified person there that was fired simply because of their gender identity. What was interesting with that case is that somebody then, Michael Smith, came in and ran against the council member or commissioner that brought forward and sort of started the ball rolling on Susan's dismissal, and he actually won. And so it showed, you know, the tide was changing there.
Now, Nathan, her contract stated that she could be fired at any time without cause if city commission voted 5-2, which they did.
Right.
The five who voted to end her contract said her employment was terminated due to a loss of confidence in her. And they say it had nothing to do with her transition. It's not about transgenderism, as they put it.
And that's a case that, for me, has a personal significance. So, little background, I'm a former Hillsborough County public school teacher who left teaching in 2009 just after that particular case to transition. I am a trans man. And we have a significant issue in states that lack protections of what is referred to as a brain drain. When I decided to go to law school, I had to come home. This is where I'm born and raised, and I want to stay here, and I will stay here. But for many of us that are looking for jobs, a lack of protections is a significant issue, and there are some counties right now where we could go and be protected, and we could get in our car and go to another county and not be protected, and that has to be addressed by a statewide resolution.
By most accounts, Susan Stanton had great job reviews. Her performance was good, and none of this came up until she announced her transition.
If I may go back to this issue of the importance of some kind of legislation.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that even though you do not have a federal law that provides protection for the LGBT community, the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, the EEOC, does provide protection for just about any employee who's employed by some kind of an entity that employs at least 15 employees. So even though in the absence, and hopefully there will be no absence, but even in the absence of some type of state legislation, you still have rights under the federal EEOC to file a complaint against that employer. I think the biggest issue is one of education. If people do not know what their rights are, it does not matter how many laws you have in the books. For example, many people are not aware, especially in the LGBT community, they're not aware that EEOC has protection for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way you're going to correct some of these problems is through education.
Mark, another bill is HB 17, which would strip away local governments' ability to pass business regulations unless the state says they can do that. Individual counties or cities would have to abandon any local rules against discrimination based on gender or sex unless the state says, yeah, go ahead and pass that regulation. And in fact, the city of Largo now has such a law, as do Tampa, Sarasota, and Hillsborough County and Pinellas County. What about that?
Yeah, pretty interesting. And right now, I believe that there's two separate versions of it, one in the House and one in the Senate. They're not exactly the same. It basically strips all regulations away from, you know, the businesses and the counties to make decisions for things like zoning, flea markets, RV rentals, really kind of is insulting to the local governments because it's almost like removes their ability to govern their areas. And it could also sunset our HROs, right? So the human rights ordinances that we have in place throughout the state of Florida, which I think is about 60% right now, that bill could definitely compromise that work that we've done.
Now,
this
bill,
areas.
If it's passed, would prevent governments from doing it from now on. But what about the laws that are currently on the books? Would it rescind those?
Yeah, so it could compromise. So that the HR, so the human rights ordinances, those could definitely be compromised and rolled back.
Yep. Nathan, House Bill 659 would add sexual orientation and gender identity to Florida's Fair Housing Act. We mentioned that a moment ago.
Yes, we did.
Again, I go back to how do you prove it? I mean, will a potential landlord say, no, you can't rent from me because you're transgender? No, nobody's going to say that, Professor.
I worked for the National Labor Relations Board for 34 years before I started to teach. And that's one of the biggest issues. How do you prove any type of discrimination? It's pretty much like trying to prove any other type of violation of the law. You need evidence. Many employers who have decided to discriminate against an employee, they have made their feelings well known. So many times it is not difficult to prove that the real reason for the demotion, the refusal to hire, the termination, the real reason is not poor job performance. is discrimination.
Yeah, Mark.
I did want to make the point that that passing this bill sends a bigger message. There's a bigger kind of component of this bill to demonstrate to the world that Florida is an open and welcoming place to live, work, and to visit. So I think there's like 18 or 19 other states throughout the country that have this bill in place. Mm-hmm. And it's an economic argument, right? We want to say that Florida is open to, you know, recruit the best and the brightest talent. We find that the millennial generation is a lot more inclusive generation than some of the older ones. And we think that this bill would be one way of sending that message to the world.
And this, in a sense, brings back the issue of North Carolina. Mm. Where they tried to strip local communities from having any say in certain laws. North Carolina suffered the consequences because many organizations, they boycotted North Carolina. So it seems to me that any state that refuses to provide protection for its people, regardless of sexual orientation or gender mm-hmm. identity, they do so at their own risk.
Nathan, I want to talk about another bill. That's House Bill 273, which would ban so-called conversion therapy. And I'm sure
yes.
you've heard what this is. It's psychological treatment or spiritual counseling aimed at changing a person's sexual orientation. So it's been denounced. I think the American Academy of Pediatrics says this is just, you know, bunk.
Right.
But supporters say, hey, come on, it's my kid, so butt out.
Well, I'm proud of Tampa's efforts recently, and the same is happening over in St. Petersburg locally. So this sort of reflects on the last bit of legislation we're talking about, where local jurisdictions are already ahead of the state's movement to ban conversion therapy. The evidence shows that, I mean, it's morally wrong, and it doesn't work. I would just find it amazingly cruel. I can't actually believe that we even still have to have this conversation, even based on the evidence that it's really
cruel,
a distraction.
Cruel in what way? I mean, I'm not talking about forcing a kid,
right.
But what about an adult who chooses to undergo this therapy?
So, I respect an individual's autonomy to make their own decisions, but I think this is one of those pieces of legislation that's a bit of a distraction from, I think, some larger issues, and we've seen sort of piecemeal attacks against the LGBT community as we've had forward progress, and it's an old argument, it's an old debate, and it keeps resurfacing, but it's a distraction.
I think these bills in particular are focused on minors. So,
right. That was all that I was aware of.
I think that's
yeah.
a key point to bring up. And so to your point earlier, if you are an adult, I think that you can't seek that,
right.
That type of therapy. But what we're finding with conversion therapy is that it's more of a form of abuse for our young people. And, you know, again, it just doesn't work. And what it contributes to is higher rates of suicide for LGBT folks that are, you know, under 18, which is a very serious issue.
All right. We mentioned bathroom bills just a moment ago. We're going to dive into that topic in just a moment. We are talking about issues facing Florida's LGBT community with Mark Puskarich with Equality Florida, Nathan Broomer with TransAction Florida, and USF employment expert Professor Roberto Chivari. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. My guests are Mark Puskarich with Equality Florida, Nathan Broomer with TransAction Florida, USF employment expert Professor Roberto Chivari, and joining us by phone from Sarasota is Bridget Ziegler, who sits on the Sarasota County School Board. We're talking about the issues facing Florida's LGBT community. Mark, there's a lot of focus on LGBT students recently. The average age at which somebody comes out as gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender has been dropping in recent years.
You can partially attribute that to environments being more affirming for young people and more accepting. We talked about earlier, you know, the generations now being a lot more inclusive than generations mm-hmm. in the past. So I think that's probably one reason.
The Centers for Disease Control says LGBT students, however, are three times as likely to miss school because of bullying and are more at risk for depression. Bridget, how are Sarasota County schools dealing with this issue?
There's two components. So specifically as it relates to bullying, we have a no-tolerance position in Sarasota County. Specifically as to the discussion and debate on transgender and facility use, it is still an ongoing debate in Sarasota County as we have navigated the changes between the different administrations, between the Obama administration and certainly now with the Trump administration. So as it stands today, it's handled on a quote-unquote case-by-case basis.
Nathan, in the Bay Area recently, an LGBT youth leadership summit took place to help students who may need some direction when it comes to things like gender identity. A number of students are not quite ready to come out just yet.
Yeah, and that's not surprising with the shift in the administration. As Bridget just mentioned, we made a lot of forward progress, and we've seen recently a shift in some attitudes, which is quite concerning when it comes to safety and the mental health for LGBT youth. And as a former student in the public school system here in Florida and as a former teacher in the public school system here in Florida, both of those in Hillsborough County, it concerns me quite a bit.
Well, making big news last year was North Carolina's so-called bathroom bill. House Bill 2 forced North Carolinians to use the restroom that matches their birth sex. This spring, the state repealed portions of that law, but only temporarily prohibits local governments from passing their own bathroom laws. Bridget, what's wrong with allowing transgender students to use the restroom of which they identify?
Well, I'm glad you stated it as you just stated, because oftentimes it's tagged as the bathroom bill or the bathroom policy, and I have to look beyond that. I am in an environment of a K-12 environment, so you have children from the ages of 4 all the way up to 18, in some cases 22. And so it doesn't, if we amend a policy, it doesn't just specifically discuss restrooms and bathrooms. We have to look at how do we handle the circumstance and that policy change and the implications it has on locker rooms, overnight stays, public access as we have public facilities. And so that's the conversation that I have really pushed my other board members and any advocates of moving and amending this policy to really drill down and look at how do we do that. So we have the policy change. You can add gender identity to our anti-discrimination policy. But then the procedures, how do we implement that? What does that look like? And that's really kind of where it has stalled.
Nathan, do you understand what the other side is arguing here, that straight students would also feel uncomfortable dressing or in locker rooms populated by both sexes?
So I've spent the last 3 years drilling down into the details, and I appreciate Bridget's position as a policymaker to be concerned about the procedural aspect. But we have to first let all LGBT students in Florida know that we have their back. And I don't know that we've done that yet. So we have to make the policy shift and not decide to not move forward because the details are holding us back. We do have to have those conversations, and there's a lot of education happening by having those detailed conversations. But we have to let the students know that we're taking care of them because lives are at risk.
Well, I just want to chime in because I think that in any circumstance where a young child, because let's be serious, school and adolescent years are challenging despite what circumstance you're faced with. But I understand that some can be even more challenging. And so I am much more focused on speaking with our administration and teachers and families and parents and working on the cultural aspect, because regardless of what your individual unique needs are, I don't want any single student to be bullied or ostracized, or in an environment that allows that and allows it to be pervasive, is unacceptable.
Professor Shivari.
Bridget, I wonder if I could ask you a question. Does the school board in Sarasota have some kind of committee established to try to deal with the issue of procedures?
Good question. So as of recent, I want to say about a month and a half ago, the board had a workshop. There was information provided to us in advance that looking at Broward County being known as one of the more progressive counties as far as adopting policies and procedures as to how to implement this in Hillsborough, and then we looked at ours. And the superintendent did share some of the same concerns I did as far as the procedural aspect before moving forward. So there is discussions about convening a committee to discuss what that looks like. So that's where we are right now.
Thank you.
Back in February, President Trump rescinded the Obama administration's guidelines that strongly encourage public schools to allow transgender students to use the restroom of their choice. Officials say policies like that should be up to the state or the local school district. It wasn't that Trump, at least according to his supporters, wasn't that he was out to get LGBT people. He's not anti-LGBT. He's just saying, hey, it's not a federal issue. Mark?
Right. And just to clarify on that, those were guidelines. It wasn't necessarily a policy. That was the administration
right.
saying.
They were guidelines.
This is just a guideline to follow, so it wasn't legally binding. So they were
but
I guess,
at that recent youth summit, some of the students were quoted as saying they're afraid of Donald Trump now.
Right.
I mean, is that fair, really?
I think it's fair, especially if I'm a trans young person, and that happened.
Nathan.
For a lot of trans youth, the acceptance that they merely exist isn't even happening, and that just can't be the case anymore.
I strongly disagree. Going back to the Trump and Obama discussion, while it was not legally binding, but there was a threat of loss of federal funds, which I fought adamantly because I absolutely agree that those decisions need to be made locally and handled at a local level. But that being said, I think that you can't just add a policy and not understand what that means operationally and procedurally. It's unfair to the people who work within your schools if you don't have any direction for how to have they handle, because it can be all over the place. And so I, as a board member, am committed to, again, working on making sure that the culture of our schools, regardless of whatever unique circumstance you have, is caring and thoughtful and working with the families and counselors in a variety of ways. But I am not supportive of changing any policy, especially when we haven't been able to identify how we specifically would handle a range of very, very important issues. And again, please remember that post-secondary versus K-12 are very, very different environments considering the age of the individuals in which you're dealing with.
I appreciate Bridget's point of view. I think the good news is that, you know, Sarasota County and a lot of other counties in Florida are not in this alone or doing this at the, you know, edge of some unknown existence. There are numerous jurisdictions, numerous school districts across Florida and across the country that are shining star examples of policies and procedures being put in place with great success. And so she talked about some of the counties they reviewed in Florida, and maybe it is a wider investigation to look across the country to see the successes and what the impact on all of the students has been, positive impact to put those policies in place. But it's an open dialogue, so even though there might be disagreement on either side of the issue, the thing that does excite me about the pushback to local jurisdictions, although I find civil rights to be a federal issue always, when it comes to policies and procedures, the good news is that we have open conversations like this one happening with school board members at the table, like Bridget, saying, tell me how we make this work, and that makes me hopeful that we will find a solution.
Mark, maybe you can help me with the science of all this. How do you determine gender versus sex? I mean, your DNA will tell you what sex you are, but there's no scientific method to determine what your gender is.
But, you know, sex is obviously biological, right? And gender is in your mind, how you identify, how you see yourself.
And that's what critics have latched onto. They'll say, well, what's to stop Lenny the janitor from popping into the girls' dressing room, you know, declaring that he's a girl?
Right. And, I mean, those are extreme cases. But, yeah, that is an argument that people have.
In North Carolina, the HB2 supporters cited that as one of the reasons they supported the bathroom bill. But the U.S. Justice Department found absolutely no link between transgender bathroom use and an uptick in crime. No link at all.
Right. That's factually true.
Should gender barriers be dropped in school sports? There was a 15-year-old boy in Connecticut just a few weeks ago. He identifies as a girl, so she was allowed to compete against other girls at Cromwell High School at a track meet, and she absolutely smoked the other girls. Could girls who are born as girls be relegated to the sidelines when transitioning boys start competing?
I mean, it all falls under Title IX, and that's part of what the administrative guidance was discussing. I mean, we unfortunately still need to make progress across genders, period, in competitive sports. So this is an added twist to that. I think ultimately with any of these issues, it comes down to the individual identifying who they are themselves. And you have the International Olympics Committee and other international sport organizations coming up with solutions and policies and procedures. Then I think our local school districts can do the same thing.
Well, I guess this is just a general question as I consider this. But so often it was referenced that gender it's a state of mind, it's internal. Why even have a female and male team if it's more of a state of mind?
Mark, that's a good point.
That's a tough question, too.
Why have men's and women's softball or track in the first place?
Yeah, and I really can't answer that. I mean, it's a very good question, and I understand completely where Bridget's coming from, but I don't have an answer or solution.
No, I think that will be a conversation as the next generation comes before us that will probably continue to happen. Unfortunately, that's the way athletics and lots of things have been, but it creates a unique dialogue. You're right when we're discussing things in a non-gendered framework.
Professor Shivari, you brought up in the first half of the show how North Carolina's HB2 affected the business climates in North Carolina. Entertainers like Bruce Springsteen and Bryan Adams began canceling and boycotting the state, and they certainly have the right to do that. Nobody's questioning that. But do critics have a point when they note that Bryan Adams boycotts North Carolina over the bathroom bill while playing Egypt last year? Egypt, you know what they do. They jail homosexuals. Bruce Springsteen evidently has no problem playing in Italy, which does not recognize same-sex marriage. So is there a double standard here?
Yes and no. Yes, that there seems to be a double standard. No, to the extent that people like Bryan Adams and Bruce Springsteen are able to maybe put some pressure within the United States through our democratic means, and they cannot do that in Egypt, and they cannot do that in any other country. That's the only argument that I could make.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think you might be right about that. So the local reach is, I think, far greater, and I think the sense of urgency, at least in North Carolina, was something that caused a lot of celebrities to jump and recognize that that was something they needed to do immediately.
Florida was the target of boycotts after the Trayvon Martin verdict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, business is a powerful thing. I think back to the comment I made in the first half of the show about recruitment and retention and brain drain. And Florida, as a leading state, to not have some of these statewide policies in place yet really puts us behind the curve from a development long-term standard economically, and that's something that we've got to get in front of.
Mark, obviously, we're watching Tallahassee with the various bills we mentioned. What is next for Equality Florida?
Well, we're going to continue to push this Florida Competitive Workforce Act. Unfortunately, we do not see a bright spot for it in this year's session. It will come back up in 2018. We'll be back there again as the only LGBT organization that has a full-time voice in Tallahassee. So that will continue to be our top legislative priority until we get that passed, as well as what Nathan brought up, the ban on conversion therapy throughout the state for minors.
Mark Puskarich with Equality Florida, Nathan Broomer with TransAction Florida, USF's Professor Roberto Shivari, and on the phone from Sarasota, Bridget Ziegler sits on the Sarasota County School Board. Very interesting discussion. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And that's it for today's show. The conversation continues online, of course, on our Facebook page, where you can send us an email. We always appreciate your questions and comments. Our email address is floridamatters@wusf.org. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini, our engineer, Richard Jimenez. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.